and welcome to Maximal Fire. I'm Alex.
And I'm Johnny.
And today we're going to be talking about, a little tournament that we ran a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
Beachheads 2023. We're a bit late, aren't we, with this one?
Yeah.
A little bit late. Yeah.
It's a little bit late.
I know. It's every time we do a podcast these days, it's like, oh, it's been a minute. Yeah. Unfortunately, life obviously is quite busy at the moment, and I've had sickness and stuff in the family, which meant that I've not been able to get to this quite so quickly as we would have liked to. But, you know, hats off to Full Stride, who managed to get their review of the event, courtesy of Howard T, out before we even managed to record this. So, but we will give you, like, the first person, I guess, lowdown of
the front line.
Yeah. I tell you what, though, like, I know, like, we're bang smack into the beginning of this and we've not even started to, like, introducing the show properly and stuff, but like, it was nice hearing a player's perspective, because we've we've done this a couple of times now, haven't we, where we've sort of digested the last major tournament that we ran, and it was nice listening to Full Stride and getting that player's perspective. So, yeah, 100%. Thank you, Howard. Thank you, Full Stride. Appreciate, I appreciate the effort and doing an episode around it. It was really good to listen to. So, yes, this episode is going to be, and I think going forward as well, we're going to be a slightly different format to some of the previous podcasts that we've done. Again, this feels like we say this quite often as well, or maybe it's just what I'm telling our patrons on Discord. But yeah. What we've decided to do is we'll be doing the same kind of length of content, but we're going to be splitting them up into two shorter episodes. That means that if you're interested in deep dives, then there will be an episode which will be purely focused on a Legio deep dive. If you're interested in the community aspect and what's going on in and around the community, then you can listen to the podcast. And that's where we're going to be kind of talking and promoting the general Titanica scene, new releases, all of that kind of stuff. So this is the latter. We're talking about Beachhead today, and yeah, just it's nice to be back in front of the microphone again and on a podcast.
Hell yeah!
So if this is the first time that you are watching a Maximal Fire video, do check us out on YouTube. We've got a lot of content coming in there at the moment. Beyond, like, we obviously have the podcasts, but there's a lot of more varied content on our YouTube channel, so do give us a like and a subscribe on YouTube. And if you are listening via one of the podcast platforms, then, you know, give us a thumbs up and maybe leave a review if your podcast provider allows you to do that. That's great, allows us to get the name of the show out and get more people interested and excited about Titanicus.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So when
it's
was past, the last
a big occasion on the YouTube as well?
Oh yeah. No, subtle, smooth. Yeah, we've just hit 1,000 subscribers on YouTube, which is pretty amazing. Humbled that many people care, really.
Yeah, that's like what, you know, half the world's Titanicus player base, so
it's got to be fairly close. It's great. It's great. Obviously, we still haven't caught up tabletop standard yet. I think they're on about 3,500, but they cheat. They use. They also talk about Epic and stuff in there. Mm. So, you know, we're purely AT, man.
Like, Puritans. Yeah.
We're niche. We're
it's anyway. Hard not to be niche. We're not talking about 40k, so you know.
This is our little corner of the rock, and this is what we're sitting on. Other quick reminders, if you we actually put out a survey, and there was quite a lot of people who weren't aware of our Discord server, and there was quite a lot of people who answered, which said that they were aware of it, but they hadn't joined because they thought it was behind like a paywall as part of the patron. Well, that's not true. Our Discord is open to everybody and anybody. It just so happens that if you are a patron, there is a separate channel in there dedicated to you guys where we can kind of have direct conversations without like involving the rest of the community, but everything else is completely open to everybody. I think last time I checked, we've got about 600 people who lurk and hang around in there now. We try and do like frequent hobby hangouts and stuff. I mean, there's pretty much always guys in there most nights, but then we try and do an organized one every now and again as well. So yeah, if you that is really like the best place to get information about us. It's the first place that we post. It's also where our patrons get most of their updates first. Ironically, not in Patreon. We do it mostly through Discord, just because it's a bit more, we like the kind of face-to-face one-to-one rather than a cold post and then waiting to see if people have seen it or click the like button. It's, you know, I'd rather talk to people.
Yeah, 100%.
So yeah, talking of our patrons though, we need to do a bit of a public apology, I think.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So we did the Tritonus episode just before Christmas, and there was a whole section of it where we were like, oh, we've got a load of patrons to give a shout out to, like, you know, definitely need to do this section. And then promptly got sidetracked by something else. and in the end, nobody got their shout outs. So massive apologies to everybody who was waiting for one. We're going to do them all now. So this is going to be like a bumper edition since the end of November, I think. So I want to give a special big thank you, especially to those people who have waited so patiently for their shout out. To Eric Beers, Josh Transu, Stuart McColl, Eric Salazar, Simon Mallett, Matt Austin, Dan Stevens, Harry Bob, great name, Gary Church, Steve, I don't have your surname, mate, so sorry, you're just Steve for now, Nathan Addison, Mike Dorset Wolf, Jim Twisted Titanicus, Ian Beale, Ed Ralph, Andy, a.k.a. Bingo Bongo, another great name, Christopher Smallwood, and Matthew Broadbent. So thank you very much, guys. I know some of you have waited much longer than others for our kind of shout out. It's what we promise you. We have to deliver it. I know it's not much, and you'll probably be thinking, oh, it's okay. But no, it matters to us. It matters to us deep down. Right? So we feel that I feel like I failed you on this. Yeah.
You can pay that on your shoulders, mate.
Yeah, I am working on atoning for that. But unfortunately, that's what happens when we get sidetracked and start talking or get excited about stuff.
Rubbish. Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And if you are thinking about supporting the show, Patreon is the best way that you can do it. And you might get a shout out if we remember to do it.
Yeah, who knows? Couple of months.
Yeah, a couple of months later. Patreon is a great way to do it. You can back us at £1, £3, £5, and there's a various different rewards that you get, with 10% off Battle Bling being found at the £3 tier, or there's a free STL at the moment for anybody who is backing at the £5 tier, and we're hoping to add to those free STLs in the future. That is courtesy of the guys at Battle Bling. They've given us an exclusive STL for a destroyed Warhound crater, which is an element of the game which we don't really use that much because people don't have craters lying around. So we thought, we will give one. Unfortunately, we can't provide printed versions of those. It is just the STL at the moment. But I don't know, maybe we need to have a conversation with Battle Bling about how we can get that provided to people if they need it. But there will be more of those. I think they've got plans to get us one for a Reaver and a Warlord eventually. But that all comes back to time priorities. They've been hit pretty hard, I think, recently with the whole Royal Mail strike thing. It's speaking to Johnny, it was not a fun month, or even longer than that.
I was going to say, like the tail end on that was huge, wasn't it? So
yeah. Yeah, I really kind of feel for small businesses in that sort of situation, especially those like Battle Bling who have got like an international sort of market. Like, they essentially were left holding the baby with all of these orders that they couldn't fulfill.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can appreciate the position from being a customer as well. Like, you get frustrated because you haven't got your stuff and you paid for it. So, mm-hmm. you know, they feel the frustration, but then there's nothing that they can do. So I think, you know, Johnny's been very transparent about this on the socials. And I think now everybody's been able to get their stuff, or is starting to get their stuff now. But upside of it was that people got an extra month of Clash out of it.
Very true. Very true.
I normally am really dedicated to Clash this year. Beachhead killed me. So I didn't quite manage to do everything that I was going to do, which is terrible as a sponsee. I did get the big boy finish. That was month one. And I did get 5 tables worth of terrain done for Beachhead in the end.
I mean, if that's not a Clash submission, I don't know what it is, so. Really.
And you did a table as well, so that can count for yours.
Single table. I was very sad after the week after I finished my Tritonus, Clash got announced. And I was just like, no. I can't do another Legio this soon. I've got to have a break. So yeah, I did a table for Beachhead as well. So
yeah, and it was very, very nice as well. It was nice seeing what you take in the I've used a lot in the past, and I think it's kind of a common thing for the community to use for Titanicus terrain when they're not using the official stuff. Is it Gale Force 9 who do the Battlefield in a Box?
Yes. Yeah, for any like natural features and stuff like that, they've got a whole range out.
Yeah, I bought their rivers and their I think there's a Mars box and there's a Badlands box and there's a few other things like this, like various different natural features. But you took those as the base, didn't you? And you completely repainted them and it looked completely different. It was great.
Yeah. Just you know, they come pre-painted, but just a bit of undercoat and, you know, dry brush later, and you can really change them up. And I went for more of a natural board as opposed to like city or anything like that, which I thought was cool. And it also means that I can use it for other war games that aren't Titanicus as well. So it's a win-win there.
Complete as well with giant-sized snowy Buddha.
Yes, yeah. Aquarium ornaments are very handy with Titanicus terrain. You know,
absolutely.
Kind of pictured a Himalayan vibe with the Palace of Terror and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, and I think it's nice to have a bit of variation. And we'll probably talk about this more when we start actually talking about Beachhead. But like, it's nice to. I think it's nice to have a bit of variation between city boards and kind of more natural boards, or maybe some really dense boards and some really, you know, not sparse, but kind of a bit more open boards, like to kind of mix it all up a little bit, so not everybody is playing on the same table.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just with regards to a few more updates about Maximal Fire, obviously this is the first podcast that we've got out since Christmas. We do have a battle report coming, we promise. It's probably going to seem a bit strange because I think it starts with us in Christmas hats.
Yes, it does start with us in Christmas hats, but there is a whole backstory that I think the patrons are aware of. Why there are no Christmas hats later on in the bat rep.
We can talk about it. We lost all the footage. That's what it was. Like the footage corrupted. We lost an entire bat rep bar the first kind of half an hour, 45 minutes or something, didn't we?
Yeah, essentially, once I got kind of 4 hours into editing, I was like, oh, this is starting to sound a bit funny. And then, yeah, 2-3 hours of footage just is ruined. You know, tried all the backup options and everything like that, but I think it was actually from the cameras itself and the audio itself. So it was a bit scary doing the bat rep again, just trying to make sure that everything is, you know, properly plugged in. And
yeah, it was definitely a bit
praying
more
that we're not, you know, filming for 8 hours and not getting anything.
I think we got a little bit cocky, having next to no issues like the first ones that we did, and we did that one, and then after that it was like, you definitely plugged it in, it's definitely charged, it's definitely turned on.
100%.
So yeah, we ended up re-recording the bat rep in its entirety, with a slightly different outcome at the end, which we won't say on here. Right. That's how close are we to getting that one done, Johnny? I'm like, chuck you under the bus.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. So I was editing it yesterday, and the file I was using, I'd saved the edit to, started crashing my PC. So I had to pull everything from that and load it into a new project in Sony Vegas. And so I've been set back a little bit, but hopefully I will have the bulk of the editing done by this weekend.
Okay, that's fine. For a brief second there, I thought that you were going to break it to me we'd had another problem.
I've gone through every like 5 minutes of this bat rep just to make sure that we've got audio till the end and video till the end, and we do, thankfully. But man, this one has been a very testing one from start to finish.
Well, so we did talk about changing up the format a little bit, haven't we? So it wasn't that this one is. I think the problem with the match, not the problem really, because it's good in some respects, but with match play guides scenarios now, they are five turns, which means you're kind of committed to five turns. There's no, unless you table somebody early in the game, there's no quick three turn wins or the game ending on turn four. So when you're playing it, you have to kind of assume that the game's going to take a minimum of 2.5 hours. So we were looking at ways that we could speed up our bat reps a little bit. But that obviously involves more work for you in the editing process.
Yeah, I think it's coming out nice. You'll hopefully get to see the new format soon. I think I mentioned it before, but please give us feedback. It's good to know what people like and don't like. I'm not saying I'm gonna follow through with everything that's said, but it is good to get an idea of what people are into.
Yeah, absolutely. And so,
if you hate this next iteration of how we do it, which isn't too massively different, it's cool. We can switch it back.
I don't think there's much that the people are going to miss, is there? I think we tried to speed up the movement phase a little bit, and that is to try and reduce the overall length of it down to focus on the combat. But yeah, I mean, you can email us at maximalfire@gmail.com or directly, obviously, over the Discord server is the best way to get in touch with us.
If you do have feedback, anything.
But I mean, all of our stuff, all of our videos, you know, we will keep doing the same stuff unless people tell us to do otherwise.
Yeah.
So if we're doing it wrong and all of the community hates us, I mean, it doesn't seem that way, but like, we're going to plod on regardless unless people tell us.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so although it's obviously been a while since the last podcast, we've not been quiet and we've not been sort of resting on our laurels. We have re-recorded that battle report just before Beachhead as well. We created and launched our own website. So now you can head over to maximalfire.com, and basically everything related to us can be found in there. All of our links to Discord, all of our links to Patreon, to what else, YouTube is on there. We also put all of our tournament packs now on there, because we found that there was problems with Beachhead around versions of the tournament pack getting kind of scattered around various places, some of which was not under our control. But now we've got one place for that. Our FAQs on there as well. That's going to be the main place for if you want to get hold of our unofficial FAQ. And we've also started rolling out some articles, so some written content as well. Our friend of the show, Stu Oliver, who will be on our Krytos episode, which we are going to be recording shortly, he's started looking at basically, we call it midweek maniples, where we pair a legio with a maniple and then write a list and talk through it. It's an interesting read. Dropped courtesy of ChromeGuard, Jay on our Discord server, who's one of our other contributors now. He is doing sort of some Titan spotlights, and he's just dropped one today based on the Warhound Titan. So more interesting stuff. We're also going to be publishing a lot of what we're talking about today, the sort of facts and figures and stuff. We're going to be publishing that in an article, which will probably be out already by the time that we get this out. So if you want to have a look at some of the figures in more detail, then that will be on the articles. So yeah, there's been kind of a lot going on, and that's also not including the fact that we've been speaking to Games Workshop, and we've arranged a community meetup at Warhammer World on the 29th of April. So that's going to be at Warhammer World in Nottingham. It's the same day as the first day of, or the Saturday of Warhammer Fest. We've got some tickets up on Eventbrite that you can purchase for that. They are free. We're just using the tickets to kind of gauge numbers. But we do have donation tickets available on there, supporting one of our chosen charities. So if you would like to donate, you can basically buy a ticket and donate. The chosen charity that we use is a charity called MND, which is the Motor Neurone Disease Association. It's a charity quite close to my heart. I lost my father-in-law to motor neurone disease last summer. So it is the charity that we support. So you can grab yourself a free one, but if you fancy chucking a couple of quid to help charity, then you can buy a ticket and sling us a couple of quid, or as much as you want to give.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. But that's, I mean, last time I checked, I think we were up to about 45 people confirmed for that meetup, yeah. Which is good.
I think a lot of people, me included, were quite dismayed to find that it was Warhammer Fest itself was in Manchester. I know, obviously, you know, people up north are loving that, and power to them. I was really hoping it'd be Nottingham this year, because it was going to be first year that I tried Golden Demon, but alas, you know, getting transport up there alone and hotels and stuff like that is just, you know, it's not going to happen this year.
Yeah, and I know obviously some people will probably be disappointed because it is on the same day as Fest and they're already going to Fest. Like the way that we, for a start, it was one of the only weekends that Warhammer World was free to accommodate this many people for obvious reasons. Everybody's up in Manchester. But also we kind of thought like there's no obvious content for our game being dropped. I'm personally not interested in 40K, so we're planning to kind of go over to Warhammer World, take over the place, rattle the sabers and make sure that they're aware that AT's still alive and breathing and we need some content. But I mean, you just watch, like, Fest will be kind of like announcing now, like, Horus Heresy Epic, and next on the bill is Battlefleet Gothic. It'd just be like one thing after the next, and we'd be just there, probably watching it on a screen or something at Warhammer World, like just like getting really annoyed.
I tell you what, if they do drop Gothic, I will force you to play some Gothic.
I do not need any forcing in that front. Like, if they do Gothic, tangent time, if they do Gothic, I hope that they do what they did to AT and increase the scale slightly, so we have some bigger ships. Like if we had like a battleship kind of like 10 inches long or something, and just bring what they can bring now to the miniatures, plastic miniatures to Gothic as well. But I don't, I'm not going to get too excited. We'll see what happens.
That'd be so sick. So sick.
Yeah. And then, right, last thing, before we get on to talking about Beachhead in a bit more detail, we've just started dabbling in short form videos as well on YouTube. So the first two, it'll be probably the first three will have dropped by the time that this video lands. We've started doing short lore videos, based on the content which is in the Traitor and Loyalist books talking about Legio. So this is just short kind of 6-7 minute videos which talks about like the original history of like Mortis or Gryphonicus and sort of like what brought them up to the heresy in the time they had now. And it's been really fun for me, because like with these source books, I often kind of just go straight to the rules and don't kind of spend too much time reading through the fluff. And it's been nice to kind of actually read and appreciate and learn more myself, like reading these things on videos. So it kind of and you get to look at some pretty pictures as well, pretty artworks. The one thing I will say though is that there's a real lack of quality high resolution Titan related images, like artwork out there, which I'm trying to obviously fit everything around. I've recently kind of got a few people to help, like Lee Marshall, Forge of Mars, and Artist Empire. I've contacted them. They've agreed to let me use some of their paint over work, where they take the Titans and do the paint overs. So nice. If you are a paint over artist and you've got some decent high resolution images of paint over Titans, then do let me know, because that might feature in one of the videos that we do in the future. So they're dropping weekly at the moment. We're hoping to do every Legio, as long as I can keep up the momentum and life doesn't kick me in the ass anymore. And we'll see where we go from there.
Sounds good.
Right.
Cool. Are we ready?
Are we ready? Yeah, no, I think we definitely are. Beachheads was interesting for me, to be honest. I don't have the same perspective that probably you have, so it's going to be interesting kind of hearing your perspective of the event, because... So for those of you who don't know, Beachheads is a tournament that we run every year. It always happens around Valentine's Day. It's usually just before it. It's a big convention in the BIC in Bournemouth, the International Centre. And they have one room which is dedicated to the traders. So you have like Entoyment who run it. They've got a stall. And then there's like Peter Pig and Warlord Games and... like loads of other kind of indie companies as well come up and fill out the trader hall. And then they have another massive hall, which is dedicated to tournaments, of which is, you know, the predominantly is going to be Blood Bowl and 40K. But this year it was great to see Titanicus being the third largest tournament at the event, as far as I'm aware, bigger than Age of Sigmar when I was last told the numbers.
Which is huge.
Which is great. Yeah. We had in total, there was 48 people playing. And people came from across the country. We even had three guys come over from Finland, making it our first international tournament.
Oh, yeah.
I think that the closest that we've got so far to kind of like a international GT. Yeah, it was a little bit different this year because we decided to... So last Beachhead was a Red v Blue tournament, Loyalist versus Traitors. In the summer, we did a slightly higher points, 1850 generic tournament. And then this time we decided that we were going to do a team tournament. So it was 48 princeps, 16 teams. Have I got the maths right on that? Of three. So each team had three people. And their victory points, tournament points were all kind of combined into one another to work out who won. It was, I'd love to say it was straightforward, but it was a real pain in the backside to organize.
Yeah, that spreadsheet gave me nightmares afterwards.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
It's fine. I won't let you make any more, don't worry.
I kind of thought, like, you know, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it properly and we're going to do it big. Originally it was only supposed to be 32 players, but then Entoyment oversold the tickets accidentally by three tickets. Now, three tickets normally is okay until you realize that three tickets in this instance is nine players. So that meant that we had to put on another ticket to make it an even number of teams. And the reason that we did that is each team had an attacker, a defender, and a skirmisher. And you had to, as a team, decide who was going to be playing what role for which game. And you couldn't be the same role, you know, back to back. So you couldn't go attacker, attacker, defender. You had to go attacker, defender, attacker, if you wanted to do that, for instance. And it was our first time running it with the match play guides. We used the objectives from the match play guide as well, and each role had three of the primary objectives linked to them. I can't remember which one. There was one that we didn't include. So it was three attacker missions, three defender missions, three skirmisher missions. And that obviously meant that because it was a five-game tournament, you couldn't be a, you could only be an attacker three times out of the five maximum. Yeah. Because it was a, you use the objective, and then once the objective is used, you can't play it again for the rest of the weekend. It was using the objective pool concept from the match play guides. And then all of the secondary objectives were available to you, but again, they were pooled. So once you'd used one, you couldn't use it again later on. And you had to mark all this down. But the match play, we wanted to stick to the match play guide for scoring, didn't we?
Yeah. And
please, somebody make an app. For God's sake, somebody make an app. Because, like, it really pushed my Excel foo to try and get something to work for this. Because not only were we adding up everybody's points and working out the difference, but then we were having to add three members of the teams together to get like a team score, a team net difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was emotional.
Yeah. Yeah, I have, after that, it has pushed me to want to start, maybe looking at making some form of very rudimentary app just for our use at first, because...
Yes, please.
Playing... I loved every single player that came to our event. But with peace and love...
But...
I don't know how hard it is to fill out a score sheet correctly, but apparently it's pretty damn hard.
Yeah, it's...
That was...
It's something we have at every single event. It's like everyone seems to get their own interpretation as to how they fill it in. It doesn't matter what you say. Like, so yeah, it's I feel your pain there. And I think a couple of times
me and Matt, it was shared between Matt as well. We're just struggling at that score desk, and obviously it's long stretches of us just, you know, helping out between games, but generally just kicking back, followed by like everyone handing in sheets, and yeah,
intense,
we were like
periods.
You know the meme from Always Sunny, where the wall of all the different like strings attached to all the different photos and just going crazy. That was basically us.
And this was of course because we had one team drop out, and because of that, we were in a situation because of the way that we'd organized it. We didn't really want to be giving people buys because I hate that as a concept. So we provided a maximal fire team of three people to play and basically stand in. We stayed on the same tables all weekend just for make it easier on ourselves. Our points didn't count, but obviously, like, if we beat you, then that win still kind of is a win against you kind of thing.
How was running a tournament while playing the entire weekend? Because you were stressing.
The thing is that when it's stressful right up until that first game starts. And then when people are actually playing games and they're down, it runs itself. And Titanicus players in general are an absolute joy to run events for. They are like every event that we've done, they're just the easiest people to keep happy. All of the stress was before. Do we have enough terrain? Do we have enough tables? We got there the day before. They hadn't given us enough physical space in the tournament hall. So then we had to find another, I think we had to find another 12 tables because they counted us as needing 6x4s. Sorry, 4x4s. And we're like, well, no, you need 6x4s. Everyone needs a 6x4 because we've got terminals and stuff to use as well.
Yeah.
So luckily all of this happened the day before. So I was serene Saturday morning because 90% of the work had already been done. But it's weird. I didn't really want to play, but when I started playing, I actually really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed playing at them because I normally don't get the opportunity. And it was, you know, I often play the same people all the time. And this time, by the exception of one person who I've played before, like everybody who I'd played against was new to me. But I got to play against, well, actually, no, there was technically two, but people who haven't played together very often. Like, for instance, I know Grant, he's at Diadrin on Instagram. He's been to a bunch of our events, always a lovely bloke, never played him. I got to play him on the Saturday, which was great fun, really enjoyed it. I got to play Johnny Core from the Battle Bling store, which was hilarious. It was a hilarious game.
Was that Sunday?
No, yes, it was the first day of Sunday.
You were both hanging out of your ass on Sunday, looking over each other at the
It's entirely his fault. I had no sleep because of that man. And it seems that I play more ruthlessly on no sleep, and he suffered my wrath on that day. He really did. That was it was a great but really hilarious game at the same time. I took a rupture, a maniple, and it's one of those ones where you don't get the full use of the maniple rules very often. It's like if a Warbringer gets the catastrophic damage, then all of the Reavers can act as if it's the movement phase. Mm-hmm. And I killed four Titans with Warbringers, which meant I had four times where I could activate all of my Reavers, my three Reavers, as if it was the movement phase. Mm-hmm. And in all occasions, there was at least one, if not two of them on charge orders. So they were just like, it was like ping pong, just going from one to the other.
It's a damn cool maniple, wasn't it?
It was like, it's the first time that I've really kind of had fun with it. I've never really had a lot of luck with it in the past, but that was so much fun. Mm. I took Lani Ascara as well, just because I wanted to. A bit of fun. Yeah. But yeah, anyway, playing was great. It was really fun, but I did feel personally I like mingling, and I like going around to people and asking how their games are going and sort of like, you know, just seeing and getting my face around a bit. So, you know, the guys can, you know, at the end of the day, I host it. I like to give people the time for putting their time into the event, which I didn't get to do so much this time. But I was very lucky that both yourself and Matt were available. You guys were basically the TOs for the weekend, which took a lot of weight. I still got asked a few questions, but it did take it did lift me a little bit, let me kind of concentrate on what I was doing.
We only had to answer, step in rules wise, like a handful of times throughout the entire 2 day event. Like you said, just itself self-runs itself, doesn't it? Even we had some relatively new players there as well, that really hadn't played that many games of AT. We got like maybe one question each from those guys. So they were absolutely killing it, doing really, really well.
I tell you what I think helped. And this was a direct learning curve from the last Beachhead, was having an event with the FAQ pack attached to it, because we covered a lot of those kind of like questions that we've learned to be quite niggly or cause arguments at our events before. We stuck them in that pack, and then people knew beforehand that's how we're going to play it. So there was just like, well, look, is it in the pack? Yeah, it's in the pack. Okay, we play it like that then. So I think that contributed to helping relieve some of the pressure. But I wasn't aware of too many kind of like difficult rulings or anything like that. It sort of seemed to kind of play itself.
No, not so. It was a pleasure. We had a really good time. Ended up spending possibly a bit too much time in the trader hall, because everyone was too good at the game and didn't need our help, which meant that a lot of money was spent. But it was a damn good weekend.
So on day one, we did three games of 1750, and on day two, we did two games of 2K. I made the decision this time that I wasn't going to stress about timings too much. So we were quite kind of loosey-goosey with the timings, but that meant that a lot of people, like I say, had time to go to the trading hall. And everybody kind of, from the feedback that I received, said they appreciated the fact that there wasn't really much of a rush. But we were still trying to keep people to sort of 2 hour, 45 minutes, around that sort of time.
Absolutely.
It became very apparent on day one that it was the noisiest tournament that we've ever been involved in. And we're normally kind of out on the fringes, but this time we were right in the middle. So I was stood in the middle of trying to communicate to 48 people or something what we were going to do. Luckily, Peter Martin had brought a dodgy as hell megaphone.
Yeah,
it was dodgy as hell for me.
It
probably cost him a fortune, but I couldn't work out how to use it, or it just didn't do me any justice. But yeah, I ended up using a megaphone for the first 2 days, and on the second day, I just decided, you know what, I'm going to go home. I'm in a band, so I've got a PA system. I grabbed my PA system and a microphone, and we just did it properly through that. And the best thing about that was that we got to use, but we just filled the entire tournament hall with periodic Titan horn noises.
Yeah.
Which is very satisfying.
Almost managed to drown out the bloody 40K players, didn't we?
Almost. I think next time we'll do it. Next time we'll
definitely.
Do it. Yeah. Just remind them that we're still here. So how many, there was 16, no, how many tables were there? There was 24 tables of terrain that we put on, like I say, various different densities, different types, had a lot of assistance from the community. But what was really encouraging to see is that, like, us, Maximal Fire alone, we were capable of, I think, 16 or 17 tables we were able to put on just between us. With the rest kind of being put on by, we had six brought down from the Tyneside Tabletop Club, that Stu and Sarah brought down. Again, they've done that a couple of times now, which is amazing.
Absolute lifesavers.
Because really cool. Because there's no way I'm going to get any more terrain past the wife. I've got nowhere to store it now. My loft is full. But yeah, it was a really good event. There was, I think, a lot of people, the feedback that we got, although it was a real pain to organize, because there was a lot of kind of moving parts and bits and pieces that I had to kind of consider beforehand. And obviously the fact that if one team dropped out, then I think we worked out there was a perfect storm that if five people dropped out, so one whole team and two others, we were going to be screwed. But everybody else turned up, which is
unheard of.
Yeah
I think in any tournament ever, you know, you usually have people drop out on the day, but apart from that one team that dropped out relatively close to the event,
we had time to kind of put in a contingency around that. In the end, there were the three main winners. The thing I loved about this, you know what, I was only going to read out the top three names of the teams that won, but I'm gonna pick out some of my favorites from my phone.
Team names, yeah?
That
was a very good choice. People showed up to that in team jerseys, in capes, in everything. People were very, very proud of their...
Yeah.
Teams.
That's what I wanted. I wanted an event where you were in it with somebody else, and you felt like you were together, and you kind of had a vested interest in how other people were doing on your team, so you could win or lose as a group rather than individually. We had the Princeps Diaries, Try Hard with a Vengeance, Lord of the Blings, guess who they were? Where Hemorrhoids to Full, which is a personal favorite of mine. Traitoris Finlandis, which were the Finland guys. I had the site item team called Are We the Baddies? Yes, I think is the answer.
They were.
The Titan Boner Club, which again, and Bottom of the Barrel as well. I wonder who they were. Maybe a team from another rival YouTube. Ultimately it was a great event. In third place came Bottom of the Barrel. They put up a sterling game all weekend. So much so, and this is where it was interesting about having the teams, because their team came third, but Sophie, she actually placed second. So she was the second best player in the whole event, and her team ultimately was third. But I believe most of the guys, I think they had two guys in the top 10, and then one guy a little bit further down, but still top half of the table. Second was the Titan Boner Club. And again, interestingly, Mark from Titan Boner Club, he was the third best player in the event. And in first place was Are We the Baddies, which was a three almost mirror lists, including Side Titans. And they proved over the weekend that, yes, they were the baddies. And it was a big surprise to me that once again, Stuart Oliver came top player of the event. Like, that's three in a row now. We'll be talking to Stu later on, I don't think he's lost a game in a tournament setting in the past, I want to say, five tournaments that he's played at.
No, I can't.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say this later on when he's on, because I don't want to feed his ego, but I think if, like, I want to say he's the closest at the moment to being like a if there was a UK number one, I think he's probably one.
World.
I think he's probably one close to probably the most that I'm aware of, and certainly all of our events. I want a showdown between him and Ben. Mm-hmm. Try and get Ben, who was on the show, who used to co-chair with me, because he was the reigning champion of the Maximal Fire tournaments. And it was only when he left the vacuum that Stu stepped in. So I want I want them to start play against each other and do a showdown. We'll put it on pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. We'll get it on like a YouTube kind of like limited access thing. Like, yeah, we'll do the whole thing.
In like a booth with like bright tops and you know, fake moustaches, like really big ones. And like,
yeah,
big
absolutely. Block. Absolutely.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
But yeah, they obviously came first. So, but what was good? I'm not going to, let's see if I can get some of the actual details up. But like, these teams were coming first, but their players. So Are We the Baddies? Stu's team. Stu came first, and then on his team, Simon was seventh, and Sarah was 20th. So like the three. This is where it was kind of good how like all of the points added up together, because obviously Stu's perfect score sort of propped up Sarah's a little bit, although I believe she still won three of her games, so it wasn't exactly a bad result.
The thing with the kind of the point differentials and the way it was scored is that actually throughout a lot of the placements, the games won and games lost are very, very similar. It's down to actual point differentials on, you know, how many points they scored, how many points they conceded. So that's why you can get some interesting looking results. I think
that's how they're doing situations. It now, isn't it, and that's what caused the headache, because you have per the match play guide, you work out who won, or if you drew, or if you lost, based on how many victory points you scored in the game. So if I score more victory points than you, Johnny, I get the win. That translates to three tournament points. On a draw, it's one tournament point. On a loss, it's zero tournament points. But then on top of that, you take the amount of victory points that you scored versus the amount of victory points that you conceded, and that creates that victory point difference. And that is the first level of differentiating between the layers. So you could have multiple people on 15 tournament points, but they're ultimately broken down by who conceded the least amount of victory points. And I don't remember the stats off of the top of my head, but the people who were in the top three, they were so close. Like, all of them had won all of their games. There wasn't just one guy who'd won all five games. There was multiple people who'd won five games, and it ultimately came down to how much they'd won by versus how much they'd lost by. It was tight, really tight. But yeah, interesting way to kind of do it, but like without an app, it's a real it's difficult.
I think we're going to step away from team events for a for a couple more at least.
Yes, yeah,
it was awesome. I loved it. The vibe was superb. Like everyone was having a really, really good time. There's the, you know, the camaraderie going around and everyone like huddling around having secret discussions before the match. Yeah, it was cool. It was a really nice event to be part of.
Well, it was definitely some good feedback from it. But one of the things which sticks with me was from I forget who it was, but one of the guys from Finland, he said that he and his team had loved the, and he used the word meta element of it, and I hadn't really considered that as being like a way of doing it, but like they'd taken the pack and they'd drawn up a playbook before the tournament, and they'd been playtesting this kind of in the months leading up to Beachhead, and they knew exactly what roles they were going to play, exactly what primaries they were going to take against the deployments that they were going to be playing on. And it was amazing. This thing was a thing of beauty. Like you opened
fully
it up, it
annotated was like maps with arrows. This was like a war document, you know, with confidential stamped on the front. Like this thing was precious.
Yeah, and you know, it obviously served them well. Their team came fourth in the end, and they were so close to placing. Like I was really hoping that they would, because the amount of effort that they put into it was second to none. But
and you know, coming down to hear from Finland just to play in an AT tournament is amazing, is wicked.
Love the dedication.
I checked with them. I was like, oh, are you here for like, you know, the week or anything? It's like, no, we're just, you know, we're flying back tomorrow. It's like, oh, wow. Okay, yeah. We're on it.
amazing dedication and a great bunch of guys. Well, everybody was really cool. It was lovely to see so many people there. It was, I think the Warhammer World was still slightly bigger, but it was certainly the biggest non-official event that I'm aware of in the UK. Certainly, I think it was nearly twice as big as the events that we've done before. And I felt it. I definitely felt that. Like, it was a lot of work. But what Matt, Matt's one of the moderators on the Discord server. He also contributes massively to running Maximal Fire. So he does some of our articles. He obviously helped TO. And he's been really putting in a shift recently. He's helping us with we're going to be doing a competition in the near future. More on that to kind of come on our socials. Keep an eye out for that. I'm not ready to kind of discuss that just yet. But Matt took all of the lists from that I was sent, and he tried to take them to pieces and look into like what was taken, what the meta was, all of that kind of stuff. Now, this was a labor of love, because every single person had sent their lists in differently, in a different format, in a different like document type, and Matt had to take all of this apart and try and work out what the stats were. And not only were there 48 lists, there was actually like 98 lists, because every person submitted one list for the Friday, the 1750, and a 2000 for the Saturday, and 2000 for the Sunday. So he went through like 96 lists to try and data mine some of the information, and this will be posted up on an article probably by the time that you hear this. But we've done the 1750. He was still working on the 2K, because like I say, a lot of work to look at. But there was a real spread of legios across the 48. We haven't counted the three legios that we took in these stats, because we considered the Maximal Fire team to be like not really participating. But we had five Ignatum, three Furians, three Astorum, three Vulturum, two Tempestus, two Veneta, two Fortidus, two Crusade Legios, two Vulpa, two Tritonis. And then in the singulars, we had representatives from Lanius, Gara, Ataris, Ordax, Oberon, Mortis, Presagius, Crucius, Demacium, Metallica, Griffonicus, and Solaria. So like, what's missing?
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
I'm pretty sure. I wonder actually if one of these might have been missed from the legions. I'm pretty sure I saw a Kula Satai out there as well. So there is a huge spread there. And like I say, the top four, although they were like five Ignatum, three Furians, three Astorum, three Volturum, like they are the good Legios. They're the ones that you kind of expect, but they're still not huge numbers. What was surprising to me though was one Gryphonicus.
Yeah.
Gryphonicus
have usually been very popular in our past events.
Mm.
They're just good. And they're like they're the poster boys, you know what I mean? They're the Ultramarines of the AT setting, so you tend to almost have a high percentage of players.
I can't remember what it was that I don't know off the top of my head what it was that Sophie took, but I know that Stu took Astorum, so he was one of the three Astorum players. But Mark, who came third, was the only Presagius player, you know, and he was doing some really nasty things with a Presagius. I think he had an Extergamus on the Sunday, and it was just wrecking. But yeah, great spread of Legios. But on the 1750 Maniples, it's really unsurprising to see that Ferox was king.
Of
14 Ferox Maniples. Now, you've got to remember as well that if you took two Demi Maniples, then those numbers would be counted multiple times. So these numbers might add up to more than 48, but like 14 Ferox Maniples. And then the closest that was to that was Extergamus with 5 and Corsair with 4. So
that's really surprising. I would expect Corsair to be a little bit higher.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a few here that I would have expected more. Well, to be honest, how many Audax players did we have in the end? One. Only one Audax player. Yeah, again, that's another one that's normally a little bit more popular. Corsair gets a hard kind of time, really, with people saying that it's the training wheels maniple. And you're looking at 14 Ferox maniples. Maybe 40 Ferox is the new training wheels.
It's just good, right? Though
it's never bad.
In all seriousness, like there is, you know, it's very straightforward of what is required of you, which is get close.
Yeah.
And by the way, here's a Reaver and two Warhounds, which are you're gonna have, really, aren't you? Yeah. You know? So yeah.
It works all the time.
Mm.
You know, it's not like I was saying earlier on about the Ruptura Maniple. It's great when you get it off, but you can't rely on that thing getting off every time. You basically take the Ruptura for the Titan selection and the free push a turn. Mm-hmm. But you know, your Ferox is always good. So yeah, 14 Ferox, crazy big numbers. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that might have shifted on the Sunday. When we get those stats, we'll be publishing those as well.
I still think it'll be pretty high.
High, yeah. Yeah, I think we'll see more Demi Maniples in the 2K.
Yeah, that's it. I'd like, you know, two Ferox or a Ferox and maybe something else.
Has
it out.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the event, we took everybody's Titans and we put them all on one big table. And I think we had like 400 models on a table at once. People had brought a few extras to really pad this out. It's an awesome photo shot. But the counted of the maniples, the Titans actually used, unsurprisingly, number one Titan used was the Warhound. We had 80 of them on the first day. Closely followed by the Reaver at 59 and the Warlord at 31. I think that is higher than I would have expected to see.
Yeah,
Warlords.
Definitely. Yeah,
but I guess
that if you count per player, you know, that's either multiple, you know, that's an indicator that at least, you know, some players may have been bringing a couple.
I think that ties in. There were 5 Extergamus Maniples, but I'm also aware that there was quite a few Reaver replacement Extergamus Maniples in play.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't actually the full heavyweight ones. But yeah, notable mentions, obviously Knight Lancers, they were the king of knights, taken 15 times. Direwolves weren't as prevalent as I expected Direwolves to be. I played a Fortis player who had 2 in their list. But in total, across the whole event on Friday, only 9. So yeah. If you take his 2, that means there's only 7 more to go around everybody else. Warbringers were less at 8, kind of maybe unsurprisingly, unless you're taking the Maniple specifically for the Warbringer. They do get a bit of a rough time at the moment with points and stuff. But yeah, other than that, 3 Titans of Legend. I'm aware that Bellator Magno was taken. I'm aware that what is the Astorum one called? Lucius Praetorian. He was taken. I'm not sure what the other one was taken. And 3 Warlord Sinisters were taken.
Which, funnily enough, I believe, are all taken by the same team.
All taken by the same team, and that team came first.
Yeah.
Which kind of leads me to my next point. Yeah, are we the baddies? Yes, you bloody were. I'm not saying that they're the meta at the moment, but they are becoming quite popular in tournament settings. In Beachhead, Psy Titan List came second. In our summer event, Psy Titan List came second. In obviously Beachhead, the Psy Titan team won with Psy Titans coming first, 7th and 20th. So well split out there. And I think that the main reason that they're doing so well at the moment is A, people don't play against them often enough. So when you do play against them, you don't really expect them to do what they can do. But also they've got Antipathic Tempest or whatever it is, the ability. Pick a spot that you can see on the battlefield, quake everything within a radius of it.
Yeah.
And in an objective-based game, that is just...
insane.
That's good. I mean, that's not even including the fact that they've obviously got the Sinistramus Tenebrae.
Sinistramus Tenebrae.
Is that the gun, or is that the thing on its back? I always forget. Oh,
I'm pretty sure it's the...
That's the gun, isn't it? Yeah.
It's the gun, yeah. I'm almost certain it's the gun.
Yeah, because the thing on the side, oh God, weird Latin, faux Latin names.
Yeah, it's not even Latin. It's pig Latin.
But yeah, they did very well. That ability, the Antipathic Tempest, I think that's the name of it. Being able to quake something through its shields, turn one, is just really strong in an objective-based game. And I think that there are some people who would find themselves crippled by that very early.
Yeah.
But yeah. They're very, very strong. I'm interested to see kind of where they're going.
They are expensive points-wise. I think, like you touched upon, it is very likely down to just the lack of people that play them. I've played against one maybe once, you know, in all my 80 games.
I think a lot of people say that they're expensive, and it means that you have like an activation disadvantage, but the Psy Titan can very easily reverse that activation advantage because it shoots through shields. You can target all of a sudden you're 5 and half.
I think people go Psy Titan. Oh, that's the anti-mutation Titan, right? It's like
no,
it's gonna just hurt better. Whatever it shoots. It's just even better in a meta where if you're playing traitor, you better have a bloody good reason why you're not taking mutations.
Yeah.
I think if we did another red versus blue, we would see quite a large number of them turn up.
It's definitely on my watch list. I'm looking to see how many Psy Titans start rearing their heads at tournaments, because certainly around our events, they are gathering a bit of traction and people are seeing how good they are. Our next event, I'm really interested to see how many turn up to that one. The only way that I can think of limiting them is if you make the points less. Like I think that you can't really say, oh well, you can't take Psy Titans, they're too good, because it's the only thing that loyalists have.
Traitors get full access to their all their mutations and bits and bobs like that, which are very good in themselves, but obviously have a lot of downsides.
Yeah.
I think what we saw this weekend, it was a good sign of a relatively healthy game state. Although Are We the Baddies had some pretty gnarly lists. They are also just good players. They are just like very good players. You could give that list to me and I would be not in first place. You know what I mean? So I think it was from what we saw and kind of scoring stuff up, it felt very, very stable meta wise. And I guess that is the plus side to never getting releases or very rarely getting releases, is that, you know, leagues of Votann don't suddenly turn up in their Dwarf Titans and skew the meta,
yeah,
in their favor. You know what I mean? So,
yeah. Certainly in our events, and it's interesting to see other people's events as well. We see loyalists placing better than traitors in our events, even though there's usually an equal split. But I know from other events that I've seen the scores from that traitors seem to do better there. So I don't really know. I don't know what there is to kind of pull from that, but it is interesting. Just before we kind of like sort of wrap this up, I just want to give a couple of mentions to stratagems. Like we took, because we had the hand stratagem hands this time round, it meant that we were able to see what everybody was taking. And again, more interesting numbers here. Like there was a lot of different stratagems taken. The list is huge, which again
we will
is
not
good.
Be reading this out, but it will be in the article.
But it's great to see like massive, huge list of stratagems. So not everybody is taking the same things. People are trying different things out. But 27 uses of Concealment Barrage. I mean, it's
just good.
Yeah.
Like,
at one point,
it doesn't
never
require
gonna...
any rolls.
Nope.
It's going to do exactly what you want it to do, which is to block off an area from line of sight.
Yeah.
That's it. Simple, cheap.
Yeah. Blind Barrage came in at a close second with 22. Again, same thing, cheap, always useful, good on the defensive and good on the attack, which is the same for Concealment Barrage as well. Mm-hmm. Gives you options. 12, a score to settle. So there was obviously a few people who were banking a score to settle to try and bump up their victory points, their secondary victory points. We don't know how many of these were actually used. We only know what was taken in the hand, but you know, we've seen more of a score to settle in the last year, start people taking them if they actually want to win, they take score to settle. It's been changed a little bit now with the match play guide, because tertiaries and secondaries can only get you up to 15, but it gives you multiple ways of scoring, which is interesting to know. And then after that it was 12 warp displacement, 10 sabotage, 10 thermal mines. So they're like your kind of common stratagems, really. What you'd expect to see. What I thought was interesting, so I'm trying to look at the numbers here. Something that just caught my eye here. Three uses of Orbital Lance Strike. But where is... Oh, yeah, only one person took Artillery Bombardment, which I think is interesting because they're similar points values. They do a similar thing, apart from Artillery Bombardment is every turn, and Orbital Lance Strike is only... Once higher strength,
punch,
So yeah, interesting. But yeah, I mean, other than that, your usual ones: overcharged cannons, popular. Bloodthirst was popular. Experimental locos was popular. Last ditch effort, cursed earth. There were your usual ones. But yeah, some really interesting meta that we were able to kind of extract out of this event, which we've not been able to do before, but. Kind of gives you
Apocalypse Missile strong point.
I came across one of those actually. Where was? Oh yeah, two of those. I played against the guy who took that once.
Yeah, that's a surprising one.
I don't know if maybe that we, like you said, we had a few people who were quite new. I wonder how many people kind of took those ones in their hand because they didn't really know what else to take.
You get the cards in the starter box. You get the model for it in the starter box. Yeah, that makes sense. Absolutely.
But it was, like I said, we had quite a few people who were new. Some people, it was like they'd only played like half a dozen games or something of the game. Yeah. But it still was super smooth. Everybody enjoyed it at different levels of play. Obviously, the more competitive guys were kind of really getting stuck in at the top end of the tables. And then the guys who were just happy to be playing games were kind of, you know, maybe a bit more lower down. But everybody seemed to be having fun. Yeah. And Yeah, I think I have to chalk it off as a win. I think it was, without kind of any bias, I think it was a good event. Looking forward to doing the next one.
Definitely. Yeah, and if you want to, we have a ton of the photos and the video of the award ceremony on the Facebook at the moment. I don't know if it's been moved anywhere else, but it's at least on the Facebook. So if you want to, you know, have a look and see for yourself that insanely huge Titan walk, yeah, check us out.
I'll need to get some other photos. We've got a gallery on the website, so I'll need to update the gallery with a few more photos, so you can get that there as well. But yeah, great event. Really looking forward to the next one. I don't know. I'm toying with the idea of doing a narrative next, just a one day narrative. Ooh. And I've got plans. Okay. I'm toying with the idea. I don't know how much of this I've told you yet, but again, working with a few people, I'm trying to work out how complicated it would be to do like
a dangerous start.
I know. You know me. I like to do things.
Hate it when you say that.
I'm toying with the idea of a global event.
Yes, I have. We have. Mm-hmm.
So we basically we'd create an event pack, form a narrative around this event, and then anybody who wanted the pack could take the pack. They would run the same missions for us as us, and then run an event wherever they are, send over their results to us, and then we could kind of get results from all over the place, and we'll do it over like a 6 month period, so people have got time to run events. And then then take all of that in and kind of then release the next. It's like another harebrained scheme of mine, which is probably gonna cause me far too much work.
Well, I have there are some interesting considerations that we could add in as well, from other war games that I will no doubt chat to you about after this recording.
So there you have it, guys. I really hope that that has been interesting to you. We had a great time. More than anything else, obviously, it's great to run the events and it's great that people turn up to them, but the people who were there made it. It was an absolute honor to be around these people, because I've said it before, I said it again, one of the best gaming communities I've ever been part of in terms of just being decent human beings who will turn up to a tournament having had a shower for one.
Thankfully the Canada Lynx Africa did not need to get used.
Not this time.
Yeah, thank you for washing. That is my takeaway.
Thank you for watching. or thank you for washing.
Washing. Everyone was really cool. Like a really, really good community.
Yeah, absolutely. But we will be publishing details of our next events online on Discord, or probably all over the place, as soon as we've got the next event pack sorted. We'll probably look to do a one day next, and then maybe another two day later on in the year. But if not, it will be Beachhead next year. And we've got to go bigger and louder and more maximal next year, haven't we? How do we do that?
Oh God, how do we keep? We need to start tempering expectations. I feel
like it needs to be bigger than if we can get even equal numbers to 40k, that would be sweet. I'd be so happy with that.
The entire UK population of Titanicus players. Match the 40k group that was there.
I want to say there was around 100 40k players, and there was 48 Titanicus players.
Okay,
so it's for a niche game.
Easy, isn't it?
We're representing.
Let's do it, yeah. Why not?
Yeah. So there you go, guys. I hope that's been of interest. I really appreciate you listening. Do check out the next video that we drop, which will be our Legio deep dive on the Legio Krytos, where we're going to be joined by Stu Oliver, who is the quote-unquote... I'm not going to give him the prestige on this. Who is a good AT player.
Very, very good.
Who has used Krytos quite a lot and actually won two events with his Krytos. So if anybody's qualified to speak about it, that will hopefully be Stu. But until then, I've been Alex, he's been Johnny, and it gives us just enough time to say, always go big, go loud.
And go Maximal.